The other day, I asked my 27-year-old stepdaughter, Dana, what does loyalty mean to you? I was, of course, thinking about the sermon. I had scarcely gotten the word loyalty out when she declared Scout. Scout is her wonderful dog, a lab border collie mix that she found in Golden Gate Park over 10 years ago. And he's the only dog I've ever met who smiles when he's communicating with you. At first you think he's snarling, but he's wagging his tail and wanting to be quiet. He's really wonderful. And I confess to vaguely recalling Robert Benchley's words and looking them up, where he said, a boy can learn a lot from a dog. Obedience, loyalty, and the importance of turning around three times before you lie down. But of course, Dana meant it deeply. I asked, what does loyalty mean? She thought a minute, and she said, it means that you're always there. Then she reminded me of her homeless days, sleeping in her little two-door hatchback, and she did give me permission to tell the story. She said, at night, Scout always laid with his head on my chest. He was protecting me. As our conversation progressed, Dana remarked, I don't know if it's possible to have loyalty without love or compassion, or at least it would be much harder. I agree. I found an Episcopalian evening prayer the other day in a mystery novel that I was reading. You never know. Grant them comfort in their suffering. When afraid, give them courage. When afflicted, grant them patience. When dejected, afford them hope. When alone, assure them of the prayerful support of your holy people. When we have made the decision to be loyal, we usually give comfort, lend courage, provide and encourage patience, afford hope. When we decide to be loyal, we are the holy people, bringing support when our friends are alone. We bring joy to others, and we are made better ourselves. Now, loyalty also calls for harder virtues, but more about that later. And we do all these things over time through thick or thin. To be truly called loyal, we must have gone through something besides ease, something besides tranquility and peace and fun. Sometimes in a relationship, things get hard. When we hang in there, when we are there, we have committed to loyalty. The choir just sang, many waters cannot quench love, neither can they drown it. Death, actually, is not as strong as love. All long-term intimate relationships require loyalty because all intimate long-term relationships have times of stress, difficulty, and disappointment. Being there in true loyalty inspires trust. That precious, precious heart bond that makes so many things possible. When people trust each other, all sorts of good things happen, like compassion and creativity and fun and intimacy and productive work. No church could stand without its staunch cohort of loyal people. Lord knows, and church workers know, how much stress, difficulty, and disappointment a religious community undergoes. Now, I hasten to add, as well, of course, as ease and fulfillment and inspiration and sometimes even transformation, but that's not what we're talking about this morning. Now, no offense meant to those who simply haven't committed deeply enough to feel loyalty to a church and its people when the going gets rough. Just deep gratitude to those who look at the hard thing going on and decide to hang in there loyally, even when they are angry or upset or in major disagreement with the leadership or each other. Deep gratitude to all who build trust, without which any community, and maybe especially a religious one, could exist. Josephine Douglas died last July, and on her deathbed, I said to her, "Jo, I always feel like in these 23 years, you've always had my back." And she said, "Yes," and gave me a couple of examples that I didn't even know about. And I said, "Will you keep on doing it from the other side?" And she said, "You bet." And sometimes in my prayers, I can feel Job. Loyalty is one of humanity's great virtues. At the same time, there are a couple of tricky and or possibly not so beneficial aspects to loyalty. The first, the tricky one, is that loyalties can conflict. That's why I picked the poem, "To Lucasta Going to the Wars." I first ran into that poem, I was an English lit major, when I was like 19 or 20, and I rolled my eyes. "I could not love thee, dear, so much. Loved I not honor more." Oh, yeah, right. Another guy rationalization for dumping somebody. Then I got a little older, and I saw that the stalwart warrior is expressing his capacity for loyalty to a high cause. He's saying that he can be considered a faithful lover because he is capable of faithfulness to the cause of country and honor. Now, I don't know, honestly, if I agree with him or not, but at least I understand the principle. Also in my early 20s, I heard someone paraphrase E.M. Forster's statement. He said, "I hate causes. If I had to choose between betraying my country and betraying my friend, I hope I should have the guts to betray my country." When I heard that, I was a tad flabbergasted, but I respected the man's views. I was in my 20s. The man was a Unitarian Universalist minister, and this was long before I thought of becoming one. So I accepted that one's friends should come before high causes. Once again, things changed. It didn't seem so clear after a while, whatever E.M. Forster and Reverend What's-His-Name thought. Think about the American Civil War, where brother fought brother. In those terrible times, an individual sometimes chose the high cause, the country's unity, the autonomy of the South, abolitionism, a belief in slavery, whatever. And that choice could vanquish the love and loyalty that they felt for family. Here's an over-the-top hypothetical, okay? You have a friend held by a well-organized band of anti-U.S. terrorists, and you can save the friend. But doing so will cause the terrorists to launch a well-orchestrated major attack on the United States. Which loyalty do you choose? Does loyalty to a high cause trump loyalty to a friend, or should it in fact be the other way around? I don't know what I would do. I'm just pointing out how loyalty, like so many important ethical and moral actions, can be tricky and can require discernment and hard decision-making. It's not hard to see how loyalty can be difficult when one loyalty confronts another and only one can be chosen. But how can loyalty be, as I put it, not so beneficial? Have you ever heard the phrase, loyal to a fault? I wanted a good definition for the phrase, so I went, of course, not to my trusty dictionary in the living room, but to Google. I was sitting there, after all. Google has over 5 million sites with the phrase, loyal to a fault. Like, Apple customers are loyal to a fault. They said it, I did not. Oddly enough, on a strange site that I'm pretty sure is about boxing, but I'm not positive. It's at the end of the sermon. You could look it up if you wanted to. I found a good statement about the very serious subject of what it means to be loyal to a fault. This site says, strange in every other way, it says this good thing. Loyalty is usually considered a virtue. Unfortunately, some people are loyal to a fault. They maintain their loyalty even in the face of ever-increasing criticism. These people can be made to overlook the truth for the sake of the familiar. For some, the time and energy invested in another can trap them. That's the end of the quotation. And a way that I would put it is that when loyalty is taken to a fault, more harm than good is ultimately the result. Real loyalty brings more good than harm, although there can be cost. 12-step programs like Al-Anon and Nar-Anon are devoted to helping partners, close friends, and spouses of addicts deal with their tendencies to be loyal to a fault. These programs help people who often overlook truth for the sake of the familiar, or who feel trapped by the time and energy invested in the addict. In my experience, such folks often overlook the larger truth out of fear of reprisal, of being alone, of financial ruin, of a nasty fight, and also from years of habit. Say the wife is an alcoholic. Once again, she has drunk herself into a stupor the night before and feels terrible the next day. She asks her husband to call the boss and say she's sick. It's very common for the spouse to just do it. It's simpler. It avoids what would most certainly be another unpleasant confrontation with the hungover spouse. It's loyal to the hope that this will be the last time, because the spouse says it is, and when they first knew each other, she was a truthful person. But as those of us in these 12-step programs know, it won't be the last time. And the faulty loyalty lets the addict avoid the consequences of her action, the complications of her disease. Facing the consequences has to happen if there is a hope of getting sober. Loyalty of this sort, which is also called codependence, does more harm than good in the long run. Left unchecked, the addict or alcoholic will die, probably alone, after a long time of misery for everyone. Much more harm than good. Have you ever had a good friend who does something very wrong and is either unaware of it or in denial that it was wrong? Let's make it worse by this not being the first time that this has happened. I'm thinking of perhaps a dishonesty, perhaps treating another person or people disrespectfully, maybe treating us less than we deserve sometimes. We love that friend. We are loyal, thick and thin, over the years. So let's just overlook this one, right? No, that's the easy road of loyalty to a fault. If we really love the person, the greater good is to speak to them about it as respectfully, compassionately, and caringly as we can. Yes, there is risk. They might be more attached to their self-image than to us, and we could lose them. We usually don't. Usually, if the person can genuinely feel the love, the loyalty to the greater good that comes from us, they will remain our friend. No guarantees. But putting up with unacceptable behaviors in the name of loyalty does no one a favor. It undermines relationships, does not bring joy, ultimately, to either the loyalee or the loyaler. Facing the difficult stuff is part of that harder virtue that I spoke of earlier. I would like to make one exception of the loyalty to a fault not being good. It's Scout. Scout will be loyal to Dana no matter if she becomes a serial murderer, and I think Scout's loyalty is a lovely thing. Now, having raised the specter of loyalty as Frankenstein's monster, I want to return to it as I began. I've spoken primarily of loyalty from the point of view of the person being loyal. What a loving service it is when we practice it. How good it is for others and for us. And knowing that this practice, this attitude, is almost always mutual, for a minute, let us focus, as we end this morning, on what it is to receive loyalty. If we remember those who have been there when we have been figuratively or literally homeless, our hearts are more likely to open into our own generosity through thick and thin. When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light you'll see, no, I won't be afraid. I won't be afraid just as long as you stand by me. One of the main reasons I am faithful to and enthusiastic about this fellowship, why I love it, is that there are significant numbers of people who have been loyal to it for years, and in a lot of cases, to me. I mentioned Joe Douglas. There are many others. These people had faith in me when I first came at entry level, to use Elaine Durbin's term, which offended me at the time but was true. They were loyal, but by no means to a fault. They confronted me with the glaring things I didn't know or at least wasn't doing or I was doing, saw the possibilities, and loved me into being a competent minister. These are people I forgot appointments with, messed up their messages, left them to fend for themselves when they should have had my presence, and delivered some pretty darned mediocre sermons to. I have had shouting matches with a few and estrangements that have reconciled. And they're still here. Now, some aren't, but I'm not talking about them. They still could be back. You never know. But the ones I am talking about, their first loyalty was to the church, staying through the thick and thin of losing a well-loved minister and getting used to the early ministry of another very different one. Some have moved to add a loyalty to me, few of which I believe and hope are of the to a fault kind. People still tell me things that I'm doing wrong. Some keep the church as their primary loyalty, knowing that ministers, however long they stay, do come and go. I am personally touched beyond words by the people who choose that kind of loyalty. It is what makes successful churches and classrooms and families and businesses work in the deep ways that matter. It is practiced by regular people going about our regular lives, and it is holy, holy work. It invites trust into our lives. When we genuinely trust, we are at home in the world and can feel the connectedness all around. Like my relationship with Joe, it endures over space and over time and even over death. If ever there is a tomorrow when we're not together, says Winnie the Pooh, there is something you must always remember. You are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. But the most important thing is, even if we're apart, I'll always be with you. May it be so.